In a world of negative real interest rates, ballooning government deficits, and where shares in high-quality growth companies are expensive, being an investor is incredibly hard. How do you allocate capital between asset classes to get the right trade-off between risk and reward? I'm James Norrington from Investors Chronicle, and while we can't provide all the answers to the asset allocation conundrum, we can glean insights into what's doing best from high-quality data. Today, I'm joined by Graham Harrison, Managing Director of Asset Risk Consultants, ARC, who through their private client indices provide dynamic risk benchmarks for asset managers. With 250,000 portfolios from 108 major asset management firms worldwide, he has a unique perspective on where investors are successfully meeting today's unique challenges. Welcome, Graham, and thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, thanks.
Maybe good if you could explain briefly a bit more about first the risk brackets that you divide the private client indices into, and a bit about the multi-factor system that you use to make the estimates behind these positive estimates you have.
Yeah, no problem, James. So the ARC private client indices are actually available for free for anybody who's interested from our website, suggestus.com, and everything that I'm about to say, you should be able to get from there as well to explain exactly how we do it. Somewhat arbitrarily, we have divided the multi-asset class discretionary investment manager world into four risk buckets. We call these buckets cautious, balanced asset, steady growth, and equity risk. So if you have a portfolio, for example, with, say, 50% in equities, that would fall into our balanced asset category. If it had more like 70% in equities, that would be what we call steady growth. The majority of portfolios that we're looking at are in those two categories. And the task that we've sort of set ourselves is to try and work out what private clients with discretionary portfolio managers are actually getting. What are the real performance numbers that they're seeing? So if you as a private investor get your valuation and you're trying to see how you've done in the year, what would you expect to see? And to actually calculate the indices in final form, what we do is we get the monthly performance data from, as you said, over 100 managers now. It's a crazy number of portfolios that we're trying to bring together in these days, more than a quarter of a million portfolios. And we put each of those portfolios into one of those four risk categories, and then we work out what we think the average result is. Now, that's fine looking backwards, but of course, we don't do that cycle every day. And so we've created a way of calculating estimates. Those estimates are updated every day. And the way we've done that is essentially we've looked at the performance of, for example, the steady growth private client index in sterling terms. We look at the performance of that going back over 3 years. And then we take around 15 exchange traded funds, ETFs, and we try to mimic the behavior of the PCI, the behavior of the average discretionary portfolio using those ETFs. And we end up with percentage allocations to each of those. And then rolling forward, we use that as the model to calculate the estimates or how we think people are actually performing.
So I wondered if you could discuss, you know, what you've noticed in terms of risk positioning of portfolios, and to discuss a bit more about what you described as an education gap among end investors.
Yeah. So if we sort of think over almost multiple decades, we've had this incredible change in the sort of inflation plus return that's available from a mix of assets. So if we go back to the mid-80s through to the mid-90s, it was possible to have a real return of inflation plus 3%, literally just by buying 10-year gilts. And so essentially, you didn't really have to take any risk to get an inflation plus 3 type return. We then go into sort of the next sort of phase, which we could think of maybe as the sort of 2000s. And we see the real return from gilts falling from 3% down to basically zero at during the global financial crisis. And during that phase, to get a return of inflation plus three, investors really had to start embracing risk assets, and in particular, embracing equities. And then we come forward to the last 10 years, and we've really had negative real yields from government bonds, becoming increasingly negative. And in fact, in March, the nominal yield on the 10-year gilt nearly broke through zero into negative territory. And maybe looking forward to the next 10 years, we actually have a period where the absolute return from gilts is negative. And indeed, it is in Europe, for example. Japan, it has been for a very long time. And so with this change going on, the expected return from a balance from a mixture of assets being held in a typical, you know, balanced asset type portfolio, for example, where they've got 50% in bonds, 50% in equities, say, that expected return must be falling, because the return that's available from the assets that are not taking risk is coming down all the time. And indeed, thinking about where we are today, we probably, if you're trying to get this inflation plus 3% return, which was available with just gilts back in the 90s, now you probably need to have 75% invested in equities. The change that therefore we have been expecting to see as we looked at all our data and we sort of watch it over time and we look back and think about what's been going on is we would have expected to see the average risk profile of a discretionary portfolio increase, because the target return of that portfolio isn't going to be met as these changes in the respective returns of equities and bonds move. We haven't actually seen that happen at all. In fact, the risk profile of discretionary portfolios now is very much the same as it was 15 years ago, pre-global financial crisis. And that sort of caused us to ask ourselves, you know, why would that be the case? Either private clients have reduced their real return expectations, i.e. they're not really aiming for whatever they were before, say inflation plus three, they're perfectly happy with inflation plus two or even inflation plus one, or private clients haven't yet realized that their discretionary portfolios aren't going to deliver against those historic real return expectations. And this is the potential education gap that exists with investors. And we think it's going to be a real challenge for advisors, for IFAs, and indeed for discretionary managers to explain to private clients that they do have this choice. They can increase the risk profile of their portfolios and maintain perhaps their real return expectations, or they're going to have to reduce their real return expectations. And that, of course, could be potentially quite painful, given that for many private clients, they're looking to live off the returns from their portfolios.
If negative real rates are here to stay, how should investors approach the trade-off then between, you know, you've got a guaranteed risk of holding cash, if you like, because it's just going to carry on, you're losing money over time, and always in a negative rate scenario, you're paying to store it, and the trade-off between the sharper but the more potentially rewarded risks on offer from other assets as you move along the spectrum towards more equity risk. And as part of that education challenge surely has to be sort of explaining to people that there's a guaranteed loss or there's a potential drawdown, which is only really a loss if you crystallize it.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, this is exactly what financial repression is supposed to do. It is supposed to encourage the movement of assets from sitting in a bank doing nothing to being invested in the productive economy. And there's no doubt that if negative real rates, and indeed for many investors, negative or zero absolute rates as well, continue, people will think, well, I really ought to do something with my money, and it'll end up getting invested into the productive economy. I think that there are probably three things I'd say here. Number one is that I suspect that there will be far fewer discretionary portfolios where the majority of the assets are not invested in equities. I just think that the idea of having portfolios which are predominantly invested in bonds is going to become a lot less attractive for people over time. The second thing is that people are going to come along offering snake oil or silver bullets, and we all know that really these things don't work, they don't exist, and chasing after a return is always going to have some risk. And if you don't understand what those risks are, it's because you haven't understood what the risks are. It is not that they are risk-free. And I think the other thing, the third thing that's going to happen is that this very idea of suitability and the way that we go about thinking what is an appropriate portfolio for an individual may well have to change, because at the moment it's very much led by what risk or what volatility of value, if you like, over time can you as an investor tolerate, rather than it being driven by what return do you need and what risk does that imply. And at the moment, I think probably it's slightly too much in the camp of, well, how comfy do you feel with this type of volatility, rather than you've got to accept this type of volatility if that's the sort of return that you want. So I think we'll have again, that's kind of educational point, and it may just require discretionary fund managers and IFAs to think a little bit about the way that they're presenting the options, the choices that investors have.
To wrap up then, Graham, investors are going to have to get used to the idea of really managing risk in their portfolios better. If we say, just from your private client indices, if you have a balanced portfolio, which I think is 50%, getting 50% equity risk by your definition, or a steady growth, which is up to 70%, what sort of peak to trough drawdown in portfolio value should an investor be prepared to stomach, or the worst performance over a 12-month period for either of those portfolio strategies an investor should be planning on having to ride out at some point?
This is the crux of it, because if you don't ride out and you crystallize during the loss, that is the only time when risk becomes real. You know, otherwise it is just mark to market losses. So an investor does need to be prepared for these things. If we just take the falls that we had at the beginning of this year, they were the sharpest falls since the crash in 87, you know, Black Monday, but they were also the fastest recovery. In terms of how much you might lose with a mixed asset portfolio invested with maybe 70% of world equity risk, then I think that you really need to, in your mind, be able to stomach, survive, live with, not panic with a 20% fall. And so that's quite a substantial markdown. Now, it could be a lot worse than that, because essentially, if equity markets go down, for example, 30%, you will end up probably going down about 20%. If equity markets go down 50%, which clearly it is possible, you may well find with this steady growth portfolio that you're down 30% or more. And so it's trying to not worry overly about the day-to-day moves and to think more about, well, how long am I going to have to sit with this loss before it comes back? And that's where this latest market correction probably is going to lull some people into a false sense of security. We, at the start of this drawdown, when we were at the bottom, at the nadir, we were saying to our clients, you know what, this could be a 1,000-day drawdown. It could take 1,000 days to get back. And that's based on experiences that we've seen during other bear markets. You know, we can go back, for example, to the early 2000s or indeed to the global financial crisis and see that recovering to your previous peak can take a very long time. In actual fact, this time it's barely a 100-day drawdown. So it's been a remarkably quick recovery. What I think people are going to need to think about is they need to plan ahead, make sure that if they're going to need to be drawing money out of a portfolio over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, that they're able to pull out that money without overly disrupting the portfolio. And if they can do that, then they can afford to take the extra risk. If they haven't done that, then they do run the risk of needing to crystallize losses at the worst time, which of course is the simplest and most sure way of destroying capital.
So really it's that the holy trinity then of financial planning, portfolio management and asset allocation. So thank you very much, Graham Harrison, for your insights today. It's been a pleasure, and you can find out more about ARC on the Suggestus website, suggestus.com. Thank you very much for your time today, Graham, and speak to you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks, James.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.